Namaste, everybody. Welcome to our 7th episode of Clarity in Similarity. This is a platform where we try to understand the ongoings of homeopathy as a subject and as a practical reality. Today, we have a very special guest with us, and we are very much honored to have him talk on our humble platform.
Today, we have with us Dr. Mukund Anant Udchankar, who needs actually no introduction, but it is my duty to do so, so I shall try saying a few words about him. Dr. Mukund Anant Udchankar has been a renowned homeopathic physician and has been practicing for more than 32 years successfully. And he has much success in treating musculoskeletal disorders, gynecological complaints, learning disabilities, infertility and also skin diseases. He is currently the principal of KLE Homeopathic Medical College, Belagavi, and some of his professional contributions include him being a key person and instrumental in preparing BHMS ordinance for RGOHS Bangalore, and he has also been instrumental in getting ISO certification for college and single-handedly for hospital attached to college in 1996 and 2001 respectively, to update in ISO systems appeared and passed lead auditor's course in ISO 9000 1996. He has also been an expert for Board of Studies, Goa University, has been an examiner for BHMS and MD homeopathy for various universities. And he has also presented many scientific articles, some of which include chronic diarrheal disorders in National Conference at Belgaum, diabetes and its homeopathic approach at National Conference Chitradurga, common gynecological problems at mother and child care program at Hyderabad. We are very fortunate to have him on our show today. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Aditya.
Sir, as these episodes are progressing, we see that there is we have an ascension towards a certain goal in propagating homeopathy, that is to understand the trueness of the nature of homeopathy and also to decipher where homeopathy is applicable as a viable and practical system of medicine. And I think today we can understand this approach through the founder himself, through Dr. Hahnemann. So my initial question to you is, who is Hahnemann and why is it important to know him as a forefront? Irrespective of whether you have a homeopathic background or not, why is Hahnemann important in your life?
At the outset, Aditya, let me compliment you and your team for taking this endeavor.
Thank you, sir.
For propagating homeopathy as a science and a most scientific method of therapy of tomorrow. When you asked me this question, it goes back. The history goes back somewhere in the middle of 18th century.
Yes.
In a township by name Meissen. Which had around 4,000 residents. That is what the history says, who were experts in artists, chemists, painters. This town was famous for decorating china glass with colors and gold and painted pictures. Somewhere on in 1753, to be more specific, it says 6th of April, a man named Christian Gottfried Hahnemann settled himself within his household. His house was by name Ick House. He was a porcelain painter, worked in a porcelain factory. And it was on 10th of April 1755, his wife Johanna Christiana gave birth to a third child of five children and the eldest son. And they named him Christian Frederick Samuel Hahnemann. And this was Dr. Hahnemann, who evolved himself as a great medical man and contributed an alternative medicine in the by name homeopathy. And today we are with that diamond science with us.
Sir, so why is it important for the people to know him? As in, he was the one who found homeopathy as a viable system. But even in today's world, a common student of homeopathy might ask, Hahnemann was the one who did start all the, who found and dug out the principles of homeopathy. But why is it important to know him as a person or to know him in his reality and what he did? And why is it important to know the challenges that he faced?
If you look at the entire history,
right.
Hahnemann lived around 89 years or something.
Right.
And his life history is so very important to know, because right. every turn that he had in his young life, education life, his married life,
right.
and his family front,
right.
was the greatest contribution to the science of homeopathy, I should say. Reason being, when Hahnemann was of 5 years of age,
right.
his father had a habit of giving his son what he called as thinking lessons.
Right.
This childhood habit followed Hahnemann throughout his lifetime.
Right.
And his schooling, if you look at,
right.
Why we should know the history of Hahnemann so very close? Reason being, how he earned his livelihood, and he came across one statement, and that was the stepping stone of homeopathic science.
Right.
Let me go back in the middle of or later part of the 18th century.
Right.
Somewhere in 1767, to be more precise, he got himself admitted in a school. Now, that is what is known as Prince School,
right.
of that town.
Mm-hmm.
And the rector of the school was Master Müller.
Right.
Master Müller. Why we should know Master Müller? Because he was his teacher of ancient languages and German composition.
Right.
And he treated Hahnemann very affectionately,
right.
like his own son. He trained Hahnemann in many languages.
Right.
This is one step we should keep in mind.
Right.
Because this is going to be the stepping stone for further knowledge of evolution of homeopathic science.
Right.
Due to the poor financial status, Hahnemann had to leave the school and join a porcelain factory as a laborer.
Right.
But later on, his hunger for education did not stop him.
Right.
He joined Prince's School once again with help of his fellow students and staff.
Right.
In somewhere right. in 1775, if I'm not wrong.
Right.
On school leaving ceremony, young Hahnemann presented an oration called Wonderful Construction of Human Hand.
Right.
You just imagine the way in which this young child was shaping itself.
Yes.
In the year 1775,
right.
at the age of 20, he entered Leipzig University for his medical studies.
Right.
And during this, his financial situation was not that good.
Right.
And he managed his earning.
Right.
By teaching French, German, as well as translating books from English.
Right.
And because of Master Müller, who taught him many languages,
right.
he became
right.
a master of almost a dozen of languages like Greek, Latin, English,
right.
Italian, Arabic, Germany, Hebrew, etc.
Right.
And the list goes on.
Right.
In somewhere after 2 years, in 1777, if I'm not wrong, he moved from Leipzig to Vienna
right.
as a medical student for further studies and joined a hospital
right.
by name Brothers of Mercy.
Right. Yes.
Here he became a favorite pupil of Corinne, Dr. Von Corinne.
Mm-hmm.
He was a royal physician of royal court.
Right.
Who allowed Hahnemann to accompany him to his private patients.
Right.
And he taught him many therapeutics. But
right.
after only 9 months, he had to abandon his student life.
Right, right.
Okay, 1777, the same year, he was appointed as a librarian and family physician to governor of Transylvania.
Right.
He stayed up for about 19 months there and learned several languages.
Mm-hmm.
And in somewhere in 1779, at the age of 24, mm-hmm. he received his master's degree. Look at the entire lifespan this soul has gone. He submitted a thesis, it says, the history says, in the month of August 1779.
Right.
And the thesis then published was of 20 pages. The subject of his thesis was, imagine, a consideration of etiology and therapeutics of spasmodic affection was the title of his thesis.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In 1781, he started his medical practice as a village doctor.
Right.
In a town by Hettastad in the country of Mansfield.
Okay.
There was no much scope and he had to move to another place by name Desu.
Right.
Now here is a turning point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He first turned in his attention towards chemistry.
Okay.
He started translating original medical works to Germany and started learning chemistry.
Right.
And the history says he was such a scholar in chemistry.
Hmm.
Some of his colleagues in chemistry used to say, after he turned himself into a homeopath, they called him, he is a quack chemist.
Right.
He is a quack.
Yes.
And a quack chemist. And they said, had Hahnemann not turned out to be a homeopath and a quack, he would have been a biggest and greatest asset to the chemistry. Look at the knowledge of chemistry right. Dr. Hahnemann had.
Right.
And there he visited a chemist shop of Hessler.
Hmm.
He learned practical pharmacy over there. And there he met his future wife, Hessler's stepdaughter, Johanna.
Johanna, yeah,
right. In 1784, somewhere, they had their eldest son, and the history says they had 11 children, 2 sons and 9 daughters, which is only a matter of history and academic interest.
Right.
In 1784, he published an original book on the treatment of scrofulous sores. That means Hahnemann had that instinct of learning and progressing and exploring.
Hmm.
In 1785, he translated a chemistry book of De Macchi's Art of Distilling Liquor in 2 volumes.
Right.
Okay.
Mm.
And at that time, hygiene practice were of very little importance, which he recommended. Many exercises, open air, benefits of climate, etc., the value of cold water and remedial agent, etc., etc.
Yes.
Then he was a sincere man. He was honest to the core. Due to which he was greatly dissatisfied with indefinite medical knowledge and cruel methods of treatments of those days.
Yes, yes.
He almost stopped his medical practice.
Hmm.
He continued translating books to support his family.
Yes.
1789, in order to fulfill his needs of growing family, he moved again back to Leipzig. Due to poverty, he released his first volume, Friend of Health. That is how the history says.
Right.
And Hahnemann expressed his agony about wrong methods of treatment at that time to his friend Hufland.
Right.
Hmm. He wrote him a letter which was published in lesser writing under the title of Letter to Physician of High Standard on the Great Necessity of Regeneration in Medicine of something that kind.
Right.
And for next around 15-20 years, the strange curiosity urged him and made him move town to town.
Right.
He never stayed in one place more than few months.
Yes.
1790 to 1804, it says, about 12 years, he lived in 14 different towns.
Definitely a wanderer.
Yeah.
Yes.
He translated around 24 textbooks and several articles into Germany.
Right.
Okay. It was the time in 1790. Here is the thing which starts with homeopathy.
Right.
It was the time in 1790.
Right.
Hahnemann was busy in translating William Cullen's treatise on Materia Medica from English to German.
Right.
In this book, there were around 20 pages allotted for the curative effect of Peruvian bark or cinchona bark.
Right.
For the intermittent fever.
Yes.
It was explained that curative power of it was due to its bitterness in small footnote of it, that particular chapter.
Due to its astringent qualities.
Yeah.
Yes. Huh.
And Hahnemann was not satisfied with this explanation. He wanted to experiment on it.
Yes.
And if I'm not wrong, history says he took around 4 drams of cinchona bark extract twice daily for several days. And he observed malaria-like manifestations, including fever, spasms, sweat, etc. Now, this is where the exact story of evolution of the concept of homeopathic thought started.
Right.
And he was a man who could believe only if you are convinced.
Yes.
And he just did not take this particular statement which was written in Cullen's Materia Medica, like cinchona bark or Peruvian bark leads to ague-like manifestations. Ague means malaria.
Yes.
And that statement was something astonishing to him. How can this happen? And that is how he took that particular medicine in his own way for several days. And then, for his surprise, he developed the similar kind of symptoms.
Right.
Now, then what was, he did not get convinced whether this is right or whether this is only a coincidence.
Right.
He repeated the same thing on himself again, and again the same thing proved in the similar fashion. And then on, he did not get convinced because of only one proving, or say only on himself to confirm before coming to final conclusion. He conducted similar experiments on his friends and other volunteers. As he expected, all of them had the same kind of manifestations. And that led him to a therapeutic saying on which our science of homeopathy bases today, similia similibus curantur.
Yes.
Which means like cures like.
Yes.
Now here, he did not stop.
Right.
He said, disease producing capacity and disease curing capacity. Because Hahnemann was a physician of modern medicine of those days.
Yes.
He must have used cinchona bark or quinine for treating malaria during those days.
Right.
And the statement he got came across in Cullen's Materia Medica was exactly opposite.
Yes.
That made him start thinking what exactly this means.
Right.
Then when he proved all these things, he came to a conclusion that disease curing capacity of a medicinal substance is nothing but disease producing capacity of the same in similar manner.
Right.
That was the hallmark on which the entire basis of similia similibus curantur is based on. And that is how this particular system came into existence. And it all matters. The question that you asked me was so pertinent.
Yes.
And this is the reason why we must know the history of animal. We must know how his life was miserable. And in spite of all those miseries, here is a soul which could bring such a gem of science to the existence.
Yes.
And that is the reason why many times Hahnemann's history is just read as a history of somebody which should be correlated what exactly must be happening in those days. Yes. And that inquisitivity of mine goes back to 5 years old Hahnemann when his father started giving him tickling things like thinking lessons. That is the whole process that Hahnemann has evolved into. And that is the reason why Hahnemann and Hahnemann's history and evolution of homeopathic system is very, very important to know. Unless we correlate all these things, I don't think it will be complete.
Yes. That was a very, very expansive explanation, sir. And that sort of brings me as a chain question to 300 years later. Today, we see homeopathy in almost a similar state as to its inception, in the sense that there are a lot of homeopaths with a different view about the subject, and some of them related to being inquisitiveness and others related to being experience. But amidst all the confusion, how can we relate the situation of homeopathy today to the situation of homeopathy as it was in Hahnemann's time? And what is it that we are doing different from what Hahnemann did? And what can be done?
Yeah. If you recollect what was taught in your undergraduates.
Yes.
Hahnemann had many disciples. And Hahnemann was a man who is to be labeled as a man who considered and believed beyond doubt, change is eternal. Yes. And he was a man with open mind. And that is the reason why he went on revising his editions of Organon 5 times.
Yes, yes.
He was very, very open and very honest to core.
Yes.
Now, coming back to why are we like this today? Reason being, homeopathy has got a little philosophical touch.
Yes.
Sometimes I may be wrong if I say so. Many times people say if Hahnemann had lived another 10 years, probably face of homeopathy would have changed. Mm. I would rather go 10 steps ahead and say, had Hahnemann lived another 10 years, the entire face of medical science itself would have changed.
Wonderful. Yes.
Reason is, now let us go back. Hahnemann was a man, or it was he who told that those tiny microorganisms will govern the constitution.
Yes.
Before Robert Koch invented bacteria, and it was more than 50 years earlier, Hahnemann had already told this. Maybe because there were no gadgets available to understand, there were no via medias to evaluate the progress of the disease as we have today. Maybe because of those things, he did not have that entire grip to understand the prognosis like what we do today, MRI and ultrasound, etc. If they were available in those days, imagine what could have happened.
Yes, yes.
And now coming back to what you asked, why is the situation today like this?
Yes.
Now, it's only because we have got different schools of thoughts
yes
coming up
Yes.
And everybody wants to say that what I am doing is right. If you divide India into four quadrants, every quadrant will say my homeopathy is the classical.
Yes.
This is what is the situation today. This is what is the situation. Somewhere around 5-6 years ago, I was attending one of the conferences where a gentleman said there are 7 schools of thoughts in homeopathic science. Imagine what can happen.
Yes.
And what can happen to a student community. I am coming back to a very, very painful situation. We are heading towards total confusion.
Yes.
Reason being, every school of thought is propagating their own way of approaching the patient or whatever terminology they say. But can you tell me one school of thought which is practicing homeopathy without law similars?
Right. Yes. Yes.
All of them, whether it is any school of thought, is practicing homeopathy, their ways of reaching to that similimum may be different.
Yes.
The ways of reaching, but similimum is the only principle. Hahnemann gave a classical approach, very classical approach, and he was very right in his approach, because if you look at the writings in Organon, he talks about knowledge of disease or physician, knowledge of physician, and what knowledges the physician should possess. And one of them is knowledge of disease. Now, do we really go to the depth of this while teaching to our undergraduates or maybe postgraduate scholars or anybody for that matter? Have we really gone into the real true letter and spirit of these particular things? What did he mean by this? And you read all these aphorisms very clearly, and there is no way that one can differ from Hahnemann's way of approach.
Right.
And what we are doing today is our interpretation, the way in which I understand, and many times I tend to hide. I'm coming to a very classical thing now. Is many of us do not reveal the secrets of our practice. We have got our own secrets which will die with us.
Yes.
Which is really a killing thing.
Yes.
People should teach the logic properly.
Yes.
The logic properly. Suppose, for example, when somebody wants to say that this is the medicine what I gave and this is what happened afterwards. Okay, fine. Everybody listens to that, and in most of the conferences we listen to this talk, and my God, everybody puts his tongue out and listens to that gentleman and say, fantastic. And then what happens is, how did he choose this medicine? Nobody knows.
Yes.
That he doesn't tell. This is where things are going wrong. I am trying to interpret things on my own way and trying to conceal the secrets that I have interpreted. And I do not try to give the knowledge in a proper way to the children whom I am teaching. Most of the time, reformation and revisiting is needed at colleges and institutions.
Yes.
The institutions will have to have teachers who are well oriented.
Yes.
Teachers who are having a passion for homeopathy, and not only passion for homeopathy, passion to give knowledge to the students.
Yes.
It is not only passion for homeopathy which will help. It is not only passion for my science which will help. It is my passion to give my knowledge.
Yes.
To the student or to the pupil who is sitting in front of me. And one thing that teaching profession or today's institutions of homeopathy should understand, by giving knowledge to the students, your knowledge doesn't get exhausted. It always increases.
Yes.
Why are we are not understanding this? This is where things are going in a different way. Things are going in a different way. And today is a high time that we, at the level of institution, we as teachers in the institutions, carry lot of responsibility of making things clear to the children, maybe at undergraduate, maybe at postgraduate, whatever may be the level. The situation is only this, and the reforming is required at this level.
Yes, yes. Sir, you brought up a very interesting point regarding the knowledge of disease as propagated by Hahnemann. There is an age-old saying that we heard in college, saying that anatomy is only for the first year and never again in your life. And some students also live by the same. So how relevant is it that the first thing Hahnemann said was the knowledge of disease, and then the knowledge of medicine, and then the application of the medicine to the disease? Because
absolutely.
And in what way should we understand the meaning of the phrase knowledge of disease? Is it because, as you said, during Hahnemann's time, laboratory findings were limited, and medicine has grown very vastly in its regarding its origin and the origins of disease. So how should we interpret the term knowledge of disease? Leading to one sub question where a little bit of a controversy occurs, saying that, for example, the germ theory, right? There are proponents who accept the germ theory within the homeopathic boundary, who accept the germ theory, and people who don't accept the germ theory. So if when there exists such a confusion, how do we interpret the phrase knowledge of disease?
Knowledge of disease in a true sense.
Yes.
You ask me different questions. I will answer them in components.
Yes.
There will be one or two, three components. One is your pertinent logic of understanding anatomy. That was your question.
Yes.
It's only for the first year, and after that, the end of the story.
Yes. Yes.
Today, if you look at the educational system that we have evolved, it's a tremendous development that has occurred. And if you look at the evolution, or if you look at the logic of progress of your subjects, right from first year, second year, third year, fourth year, there is a logical linkage between all these diseases, which normally is lost. And that is where again, educational system itself needs to be linked. There is something what is known as horizontal integration of the subjects and vertical integration of the subjects. You raised a pertinent question regarding anatomy. Unless we know the structure, how do we know the function?
Yes.
Unless we know the structure, we will not come to know the function. Unless we know the function, normal function, we will not appreciate the abnormal function. Yes. And unless we know what makes it abnormal, and what abnormalities can be predicted, or what abnormalities can predicate as a disease entity, you will not come to know clinical subjects.
Right.
Now, let me come back to a common parlance of understanding. Anatomy is taught in first year because you are sensitized to know the structure.
Yes.
You are sensitized to know where and what is located.
Yes.
And the same anatomy has to be integrated while teaching, which is lacking.
Yes.
Integrated while teaching physiology. Suppose, for example, if you are teaching anatomy of the heart, and at the same time, if you are teaching cardiac cycle and junctional tissues, the cardiac impulse and generation and its function, both together, if you relate, the normal functioning with the structure is very clear. Unless this foundation of anatomy and physiology is good, you will not understand pathology.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And very clearly, If you read William Boyd's pathology, textbook of pathology by William Boyd, in his introductory pages, he writes in the first or second paragraph, he writes, as is your pathology, so is your clinical practice.
Yes.
Can you understand now the implication of this?
Yes.
Unless anatomy, physiology and pathology is strong, this is the foundation of understanding clinical entity.
Yes.
And unless these three are being taught, being taught, and they are interpreted properly in the light of homeopathy. Now I'm coming back.
Yes.
When you are talking about pathology.
Yes.
When you said germ theory and other things, now let us correlate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now let us correlate. What exactly, how exactly these diseases and were classified by Hahnemann?
Yes.
Go back to classification of diseases in BK Sarkar, if you take. He classifies the diseases, surgical diseases and dynamic diseases.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now here, when he speaks about dynamic diseases, he speaks about miasmatic and non-miasmatic diseases.
Yes.
And when he comes down there and talks about something like surgical diseases once again.
Yes. Yes.
Once again. Are you getting me? Getting me?
Yes.
Which are those surgical diseases and which are these surgical diseases which broadly classified? We need to really understand.
Yes.
When he classifies these surgical diseases, which are mechanical in injuries or traumas or etc., they are not mechanical. They are not miasmatic.
Yes.
They are not dynamic diseases.
Yes.
But there is a class of surgical entity. There is a class of surgical entity.
Right.
Which evolves itself from a dynamic derangement at the level of the vital force.
Right.
And comes to a stage of destruction where we may label it in any terminology that we say. But Hahnemann very clearly classifies them. Psoric, psychotic and syphilitic.
Yes.
You take any disease condition and try to classify this. I will bet you nobody can change this concept.
Yes.
You give me any disease concept, any disease, we can fit it in this. And Hahnemann's classification of diseases was so clear. It was very clear in his understanding. And that is what he meant by knowledge of disease.
Yes.
For example, when they are talking about germ theory and non-germ theory.
Yes.
He somewhere in his organon, he talks, when the constitution or the ground where he means the human body as ground.
Yes, the terrain.
It is jittering.
Yes.
Those tiny microorganisms will rule.
Yes.
And affect the individual. What does it mean?
Yes.
What does it mean? It means we may call it as immunity, we may call it as immunosuppressant, we may call it as immune compromise, we may call it as anything by the terminology. But he had very clearly said at that time.
Yes.
Somewhere down the line, your constitution has gone weak.
Yes.
And those microorganisms otherwise which were not affecting you are affecting you now. That means there is something wrong at the base of your constitution. And that is how these organisms are playing.
Yes.
Does it not clarify that doubt?
Yes. Yes.
It definitely clarifies.
Yes. Yes. Yes, sir. So with the clearance of this doubt, we move ahead to the strong propagation of Hahnemann's philosophy in that no matter how we interpret the organ on whichever aphorism we base our practice on, we finally, as you said, are coming back to the same law, that is, similia similibus curantur.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes, but when we come to the point of subjective expression, that is, for example, as you said, in a few seminars, some people consider the weightage to be in the mind. symptom,
yeah.
and so others yeah. consider the weightage to be in the pathology. So the argument of the person who speaks over the mind is that pathology is a very new concept in the materia medica. And if you take a lab report, for example, the leukocytic count has increased. There are very few drugs which say increased leukocyte. But rather, it is manifested in the form of symptoms where the mind of the person has been changed. And the counter argument of the pathologist is that, no, even though the symptoms do manifest in the individual, since modern technology or the medical technology has advanced, we should also consider the lab reports as a basis for prescription. So, and this is one of the reasons why there are many schools of thought in homeopathy. Now, how do we bring a union amidst these schools so that we interpret it as the same thing which Hahnemann said?
Okay. Now, see, what are these lab reports indicating? These lab reports are indicating what the disease is underlying, how the disease is progressing.
Yes. Yes.
That's the only thing which is being indicated by these lab reports?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes. Yes.
This is only, see now, let me come back to that little later because it will be too premature at this point of time.
Yes, sir.
The lab reports, what are these lab reports? Lab reports are physical evidences that the body is responding at a pathological level or physiology of this body is altered and normal values are being disturbed.
Yes.
Basic thing that has happened is, why do these normal values get disturbed? The concept of disease is, the disease starts much earlier than it makes its appearance in the form of symptoms.
Yes.
That is where we differ. Say for example, many times today's senior most physicians also are coming to that line. That disease begins much earlier than it makes its manifestation. Yes. By the time it comes to its manifestations, you have already rendered the disease to be incurable.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
Today is the people are talking that language.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And let me tell you, it is not important.
Yeah.
To consider only lab reports as evidences, because unfortunately, today we are talking about a medical science which thinks about only evidence based. You have to show the evidence. There is no doubt about it.
Yes,
you have to show the evidence. There is no doubt about it. No intellectual person with such an amount of evolution in the science of all the fronts will believe only subjective things. There has to be objective manifestation. Now coming back.
Yes.
What is important? Say for example, when we are teaching in medical education, we say, what is important? I'll give you two scenarios.
Right.
A person comes to you and tells that I am absolutely all right. His all reports are abnormal.
Yes.
All reports are abnormal. He says nothing wrong with me. And at the same time, there is a man whose all the reports are normal. And he says, I am not feeling well.
Yes.
There is something going wrong. Which is more dangerous situation? More dangerous situation according to me, a man who has got all normal things but feeling unwell is a warning.
Yes.
Something is going wrong, which may impend something later on. Number one. Now, once this concept is clear, modern laboratory findings or lab findings cannot be rejected in toto.
Yes.
They are to be considered because that is the via media to understand how the disease is progressing.
Yes.
Okay. It is not the treatment. It is not, MRI is not treatment. X-ray is not a treatment. HRCT is not a treatment.
Yes.
They are only via media to understand the progress. Right?
Yes.
Now, if you go back, the concept of disease evolved by Hahnemann.
Yes.
From functional disorders to inflammatory induration and destructive changes, from syphilitic, azoric to psychotic to syphilitic, that is how the disease progresses.
Yes.
Disease progresses. there are situations. Now, let me ask a counter question.
Yes.
Today's, let us take today's today's pandemic situation of COVID.
Right.
Okay. Now, COVID, we have been, the entire human community or entire humankind and the entire world is taken for a ride.
Yes, yes.
We are not able to predict anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a fellow who is having very mild symptoms
mm-hmm.
and a fellow whose choroid score is 11 out of 25
mm-hmm.
and suddenly one fine morning that fellow dies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And we have got all theories to establish, you know, pulmonary embolism, pneumonia,
yes.
respiratory failure and so many things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And there are people who were admitted, who were my close friends, who were admitted 22 score out of 25
mm-hmm.
on ventilator for 4 days,
mm-hmm.
took discharge against medical advice
mm-hmm.
and the fellow is absolutely fine at home today. Now, where do I explain this?
Yes. Yes.
Where do I explain right. this?
Yes.
That means there is something which is governing the human body, and that is where vital force has to be appreciated.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Do you agree with me?
I do, sir.
A fellow with a 7 score dies. Mm. A fellow with 23 out of 25 score comes back.
Yes.
Do you mean to say that COVID in him was more dangerous than him? Same virus.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The progress was different. Whereas here, we the pathology report, the HRCT report, and the scoring and the norms, all the values were so abnormal that everybody said he is not going to survive.
Yes.
And that fellow is back home and yes. doing absolutely fine. Last 3 months, he has been discharged and doing very well.
Yes.
I spoke to him yesterday. But yes. but imagine a man of 42 years old, choroid score 7, suddenly one fine morning pops off. Why?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Yes.
We don't know.
Yes.
That is where we will have to believe something. Believe something today that there is a concept of vital force which Hahnemann talked about. And it is the derangement of this vital force expressed externally. Expressed externally is the disease component. And whether it is 23 or 7, how that is going to receive and respond is going to depend upon its vitality.
Yes.
And that is where we need to inculcate two things. One is scientificity to an extent where it is going to give you signals. It is going to give you earmarks. It is going to give you the stepstones of disease, the way in which it is progressing.
Yes.
But major thing that I need to understand is there is something beyond.
Yes.
There is something beyond. And that is what exactly Hahnemann brought out. And that is where we as homeopaths need to establish those areas and try to bring out as much as possible the evidences to match from the today's needs and then establish scientifically. That's the only way where we can establish ourselves. Otherwise, it all has got unexplained things.
Yes.
It's only subjective.
Yes.
And again, loss of disappearance of symptom is not disappearance of the disease.
Yes.
It's very, very well known.
Mm-hmm.
The symptoms disappear doesn't mean that the disease is gone. The patient has to have total well-being.
Yes.
And it has to make itself evident in all the respects. And that is where we can say cure.
Mm-hmm. Sir, but cure is rather
a relative terminology that I can say.
Yes. But here there is one contradictory statement made by Hahnemann himself, where he responds to Hufeland, say, because Hufeland says homeopathy only removes the symptoms but does not cure the disease. And Hahnemann says, isn't the removal of the symptoms themselves the curing of the disease? What else is there to cure in the individual rather than to remove the symptom? So okay. how would your statement interpret this?
See, my statement is again very clear.
Huh.
What are these symptoms? Where they have come from? These symptoms are, these symptoms are external manifestations of an internal deranged vital force.
Right, right.
Do you agree with me?
I do, yes.
100%. Disappearance of these symptoms does not always mean cure. That needs to be understood by us.
Yes, yes.
Disappearance of all the symptoms does not mean.
Yes, yes.
Does not mean. Until and unless, until and unless, there is a total well-being which is defined.
Yes, yes, yes.
That so is where we need to understand.
Focus our attention on the term removal and disappearance.
Yes.
Yes.
Removal and disappearance.
Yes.
Removal and disappearance is, you know, I'll give you a simple example.
Yes.
When I still remember that particular thing very distinctly.
Yes.
We were in a surgery post in final year, way back in 1979.
Right.
There was a case of thromboangitis obliterans which was presented by me in my clinical class.
Right.
And the fellow, you know, was a smoker, a classical TAO.
Right.
He had that blackish discoloration, purplish discoloration, everything was there. And it was right-sided and so many things happened. And somebody gave him lycopodium. Next day or after 2 days, the burning pain disappeared.
Right, right.
Burning pain disappeared.
Disappeared.
Okay.
Right.
Disappearance of burning pain, does it mean that cure of TAO? Disappearance of burning pain was an evidence of gangrene settling.
Yes, yes.
This is what exactly needs to be interpreted by knowledge of disease.
Yes.
And he had line of demarcation in the middle of his foreleg.
Right.
And after 2 months, we saw the same person with above knee amputation of his right limb.
Right.
This is what exactly needs to be understood with the hairline difference of removal and disappearance.
Right.
And that is where I hit that nail on the head, that knowledge of disease, you combine everything. You combine everything.
Yes. Yes.
And that's why Hanuman, if he had knowledge of all these things at his disposal, probably he would have changed the entire medical field.
Yes. 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 Moving on, sir. To conclude the session, I have one final question which pertains to the limitation of our subject. Because I personally think if we know the limitation of our subject, the boundaries of our subject, it will only help us push them further.
Absolutely
so,
right.
Right now, where is it that homeopaths or young homeopaths are going wrong in not recognizing the limitations of their subject so that it sort of falls into the section of magical healing?
Right. Now, knowing the limitations of homeopathic system is the first step, I would say.
Yes.
With my, you know, I have been in teaching for last 40 years. What is being taught in the colleges?
Right.
More emphasis has to be made on limitations.
Right.
Because the modern science is progressing so fast, so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, not that we, Hanuman did not write these things in Organon.
Right.
Hanuman also has written these things in Organon. And a classical example which can be given, you know, if you read aphorism number 185.
Right.
When he talks about local maladies, when he talks about surgical diseases.
Yes.
Say, for example, it is very clearly written. You read the commentary that is given by various people and read D.K. Sarkar's commentary.
Yes.
It's very, very clearly explained that many things in one or two sentences, if we try to understand one or two sentences, it makes lot of clarifications.
Yes.
Let me tell you. He says, alignment of fracture fragments of the bone.
Right.
It is written there.
Right.
Can we today teach a student that a fracture has got these couple of drugs? You give Arnica, you give Calcarea Pass, you give Simphytum, and the fracture will heal. Will it be possible?
No.
It will not be. It is my duty as a teacher to impart this particular limitation.
Yes.
This particular. Because very clearly Hanuman has said it. We cannot blame the system. We cannot blame Hanuman. He has very clearly said it is we people who are wrong in our interpretation.
Yeah.
I cannot say that I can treat any fracture case. No, it is not.
Yeah.
And it's very clearly written there. Reunion or bringing the fracture fragments in one alignment, maybe by any means. Today the science has advanced, you will have to accept it.
Yes.
Say for example, if reduction, immobilization and rehabilitation are the steps of management of a fracture, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Reduction is what? Reduction is bringing the bone fractured fragments into one alignment.
Yes.
By what means it is left to you. It may be open reduction, it may be closed reduction, it may be methods, it may be wiring, it may be rod, it may be whatever, what God knows what. Orthopedics has made so much of progress. But we have to understand alignment, bringing that in alignment is also written by homeopathy, and that is where we will have to accept that here is a stage where we must have knowledge of disease, and this is what exactly needs to be done. This is not to be treated only with our drugs.
Yes.
That knowledge, that limitation has to be understood.
Yes.
Let me go back to two more points which will clear up major things.
Right.
Suturing of gaping of wounds.
Right.
Is also written there.
Yes.
Why? Suturing is bringing the two flaps of the skin together.
Right.
By means of suturing, you are just bringing them together.
Right.
So that the healing comes back faster. Is it written or no?
Yes.
It is written.
Yes.
It is written. Number. Then he writes one more sentence, which many of the times we had an argument on the dais.
Right.
And I had to literally bring the book and show them that this is what is written here. This is where the teaching has to change.
Yes.
Reason is, see, what he says, letting up or letting out pent up discharges from the cavities of the body.
Right.
Is a must if it is coming as a obstacle in the process of cure.
Right.
Mark my sentence.
Yes. Yes.
Letting out pent up discharges from the cavities.
Hmm.
Cavities which is coming as an obstacle in the process of dynamic cure.
Right.
Is a must. Now you go back and read. Which are those cavities? Skull is a cavity.
Yes.
Abdomen is a cavity.
Yes.
Chest is a cavity.
Yes.
Now, intracranial bleeds, so yes. Extradural bleeds. Unless you remove that pressure from the brain, what method you use, it is up to you.
Yes.
But that has to be taught. From the cranial cavity, which is coming today, it is coming in the way of your process of response of the patient.
Yes.
That particular discharge has to be let out. Unless that pressure from the brain is taken out, the patient is not going to come out.
Yes.
Is this not written?
It is. Yes.
It is written.
Yes.
Say for example, there is a splenic rupture, there is appendicular rupture, or there is a perforation, there is a ruptured ectopic gestation. What do you do with your drugs? Here is a point where Hanuman says proper knowledge of the disease. Now you must possess that knowledge of disease.
Right.
What are the implications of peritonitis? What are the clinical manifestations of perforation? What are the clinical manifestations of a rupture of an organ inside? Is it leading to peritonitis? No.
Yes.
How do we know this? And where are we teaching these things in the class? Most of the times whenever we talk, the people get discouraged. I said, you talk only limitations and people will get discouraged. No, I said, no. You must teach that because whether you like it or no, after graduation, the fellow is going to treat somebody's life.
True. Yes.
And that life has come to you surrendering himself. It's my duty as a teacher to impart a proper thing. And that is where people should read these and interpret the way in which it is to be interpreted.
Yes.
And try to customize for today. Try to customize for today.
Yes.
And try to understand, bring all the things together.
Yes.
And then only we are going to make the system of homeopathy survive.
Yes.
And last sentence of mine is, today, Aditya, today,
yes,
I must really admire you and your team for taking this venture.
Thank you, sir.
Today is a day, Aditya.
Yes.
It is a time,
yes,
for all the medical faculties.
Yes.
All the medical branches.
Yes.
Should act as complementary to each other rather than competitive.
Definitely. Yes. Yes.
And that is the only way to make this entire world a peaceful place for living safely.
Yes. Yes. I think you have redefined what Hahnemann, in his very first aphorism, told as rapid, gentle and permanent healing. It is only possible,
yes,
through complementing each other and not
complementing
or
each
competing
other
with each other. Yes.
Yes. So that was a wonderful conclusion by you. And believe that this is the direction that we must take going ahead. Be it a homeopath or any other form of alternative medicine or a student of today's modern medicine, as they call it, must work in union and complement each other in order to better the health of everyone, not just...
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you agree what I said?
I completely agree, sir. And as you said, they must know their limitations and they must know their possibilities in order to complement.
Yeah, and for that, do you know what is the crux? For that, you need to understand basic foundation of anatomy, physiology, pathology, medicine.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that is where, what is the linkage and a logical linkage?
Yes, yes. Definitely.
Do you agree with me?
Definitely, sir. I completely agree. And I must thank you from the bottom of my heart for giving us your precious time and clearing a lot of doubts. I suppose not only with the young people that are today in homeopathy, but also the seniors who sometimes, as you said, might interpret it a little differently. But today, I think you opened the doors to a lot of questions that were closed. And I think with our small podcast, we could help bring out these ideas of yours.
Yeah.
And it might help, even if it helps at least one person in the future. And if he propagates it to hundreds of students, we have done our job. So we thank you very much.
Aditya, I have made one principle in my life.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Huh.
You change at least 5 students in 1 year.
Yes.
Not that I have taken a contract of changing everybody.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Even if I am able to influence 5 people in a year.
Yes.
In 40 years, imagine how many people. It must have been 200 people.
Yes. Yes.
No, my life is done. That is how I look at it.
Yes, yes. And that is a wonderful way of looking at it, sir. Because Hahnemann, looking back at Hahnemann himself, he, during his lifetime, with him, in his close circle, he probably had only 5 or 6 students who were devout students. And they spread the knowledge throughout the world.
Absolutely right.
Yes. So we thank you very much, Dr. Mukund Anant Udchankar, for giving us your precious time. And we hope we can have more sessions like this with you.
Anytime.
So thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Okay.